You better. We know that. Tell us something we don't know.
remember this land.
Merry Christmas from the George Wilder Jr. Show. I want to say Merry Christmas. It's a few weeks before Christmas. At the date of this show, it is. And welcome, everybody, to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Hope you enjoyed that. But, trying to get you guys out there in the spirit of Christmas. This is a talk show, and I'm your host, George Wilder Jr., broadcasting live out of the city of Chicago. On a great day. They say it's going to get a lot colder as the week progresses. And we're going to have to be prepared for that. Well, like I said, I'm on the north side of Chicago. It is great. We have the Christmas spirit over here, folks. And a lot of people do not have that spirit. And if for many, many reasons. But we do have that spirit, Christmas feeling and Christmas spirit here. You know, even though, you know, we're not any better than anyone else. Okay. All righty. Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Let's do this small introduction here, folks. All right.
This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
All right. Thanks for that, Denver. That was Denver Wilder, of course, my son. I'm going to get him to redo that. Okay, we are on the air, and it is so exciting, folks, to be on the air. Okay, White Sox deal Chris Sale to Red Sox for 4 prospects. I wanted to say something about that for a second, folks. Seemed like Chicago sports team, whenever a player becomes great or awesome or most valuable person in PV, you know, they trade. I mean, they get rid of their best players. They get rid of a majority of the time. These players go to better teams with better records. And the White Sox play them in the regular season, they lose to the team that they, you know, dealt their best players to. It doesn't make sense to me. The Bears do the same thing. The Cubs have done the same thing. I understand it's business. I understand that it's the way things are done in the sports world. But, you know, sometimes it seems a little bit crazy to deal Chris Sale off. And this guy is one of the greatest pitchers in the history of baseball. To get rid of him for 4 prospects, which meaning that these guys have not been vetted as much, you know, it's just crazy. Why not keep him and win the World Series with him down the stretch, down the road? It's crazy. But like I said before, I'm just a radio talk show host, folks. So I just throw my 2 cents in there. And I'm just looking at this thing on the computer. White Sox deal Chris Sale to Red Sox for 4 prospects. I don't care if they're getting 400 prospects for this guy. They should have kept this guy in the city of Chicago. The fans loved him. He was great. He was a great all-around individual, a superstar. The White Sox should have kept this guy. But now he's gone, and we get 4 players who are not the fans know nothing about. We know about Chris Sale. We know what he can do. The world knows what he can do. Now he's been dealt to another team, the Red Sox, which in my opinion can win the World Series with Chris Sale next year, once the season get underway during the springtime of 2017. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. We will be right back, folks. Hang in there. All right.
Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live out of Chicago, and we are helping to make the world a better place one show at a time. Thank you for listening. Thank you for finding the show, downloading the show, and just having a great time. Here we go.
All right, like I've said, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live out of the city of Chicago. Yeah, it's a great city, folks. No matter all the negative press that Chicago gets on the crime situation, I mean, this crime happens everywhere, but somehow we get the most of it because our police force can't seem to solve these things or prevent these things or you know, or stop the crime and bring it down. And this is what they get paid to do. Okay, so, but this is a great city. It's a great town. It's a wonderful place. It's very Christmassy here. People love Christmas in Chicago. I know there's some people who don't celebrate it, but that's their prerogative. But here in Chicago, we like Christmas. You know, I have even written a short story on Christmas, and I've been getting some really, really good feedback on it. Positive feedback on it. People have downloaded it all over the world for free. People, well, that's one of the things you can say about Americans. They love stuff for free. I mean, Jesus Christ, you, if it's free, no matter how horrible it is, how bad it may be, if it's free, they're going to take it. Even if they can afford it. Even if they can afford it, they're going to say, hey, it's free. I'm going to get it. Might as well. It's a great story. It's a beautiful story, and it took me not too long to write it. It's short. I love writing short stories. I like to be short and sweet with what I write, because I want people to just. But one of the things about writing short stories for me is I can't speak for other writers who are on the short story bandwagon, but for me, writing short stories means getting to the plot quick. You got to get to the plot quick. You got to solve the problem. And sometimes, you know, in short stories, the problem is not solved. It just lingers on until you write the next installment for that particular story or genre, you know, or series you want to make out of it. But I love short stories, and most of the ones that I do, I try to make them attention grabbing. Most of the people who say they read my stuff, they said they just read it at one setting. They don't have to, you know, cap off the next page or anything. They just, you know, they don't have to mark the next page that they leave off and go, you know, go do whatever they have to do and then come back. You can read my stories in one settings. More likely they're just 40 to 50 pages, which is great. I mean, the short story craze, folks, is really, really catching on, and it has caught on. So you readers out there, you have to catch on too. I've been criticized for writing short stories. People have said, well, George, you're too short. George, you left me hanging. George, it was a great story, but I needed more. And sometimes people criticizing you in that manner can actually result in a bad review. Well, it was great, but he left me hanging, so I'm gonna give him 3 stars. You know, or worse, you can get a lower, 2 stars, 1 star. Depends on the person who reads it. Then you have people who out there who say, "Well, George, a great story, beautiful written. Give us some more." You know, right there, you know, you got a 5-star review. But there's so many people who will download a book from Amazon or even Barnes and Noble, and I can have 1,000 downloads of my short stories and will not get a review. You know, people just don't like to write reviews, or they're forgetting, or they just don't find the time to do them, or, you know, but they will enjoy the book. And that's more engaging to me, because as an author, I think that's great. I think that's wonderful. Well, anyway, Merry Christmas, everybody. I'm just ranting and raving about my books, and I love to write. I'm doing that right now as I'm on the radio. And it's fun. It's great. It gives me something to do. Also, the radio show gives me something to do. And we're just here for you. This show is all about making the world a better place, you know. But that world cannot be made a better place unless we can look ourselves in the mirror and make that change. As Michael Jackson, the late Michael Jackson, said in one of his songs called "Man in the Mirror." You want to make the world a better place. Take a look at yourself and make that change. That is just so riveting. That is just so awesome. I wish I had written that, but I'm gonna use it in order making the world a better place. And I can't do it, and you can't do it without other people. You know, we have to look at ourselves and make that change. I'm talking about not just Chicago, not just America, but all around the world. We have to look at ourselves and make a change. If we see other people going down the wrong path, the wrong road, it seems like we're destined to try to change that person, to try to get those people onto the proper road, the right road, if we can. And if you don't know how to make the world a better place, it's just simple. Just, you know, do something nice for someone. Do something nice for yourself. Stop and smell the roses or something. You know, another way, put the guns down, stop the shooting, stop the killing, stop the arguing, stop the bitching, you know, stop the getting pissed off and then taking out a gun and shooting somebody. Stop all of that. That's not making the world a better place. You make the world a better place when you go out and get what you want. You have to go out and seek what you want. If you don't go out and get what you want, you'll never get it. If you don't ask questions, then you'll never get the answers. You know, all of this is making the world a better place. Because even if you better yourself, even if you better the person that you are in a positive way, you are making the world a better place, because you're going to be a model for the rest of those people out there who are not making the world a better place, who are actually making the world a worse place than what it already is. So, you know, be a role model, be a protege, be someone that others can look up to and say, wow, I want to be like that. Wow, I want to do what he's doing or do what she's doing. Because, folks, there's too many haters out here. There's too many racists out here, and they are out here in droves, and I am not kidding. They are all everywhere, and I can sit here in my studio at my desk right here and say, let's make the world a better place, but there's someone out there who doesn't want that. I mean, literally doesn't want that, and going to try to do everything to try to hinder that. However, we must be strong. We must not let hate outdo anything positive that we have done or we will do in the future. And that's what this show is all about. It's all about making the world a better place. It's all about informing you, inspiring you, educating you, and empowering everybody out there to be the best that you can be. Be good at what you do. No matter what it is, if it's sweeping floors, be good at what you do. If you're working in a corporation and you're an executive and you're overseeing franchises, be good at what you do. If you're working in a cleaners, be good at what you do. Then that way you will never be replaced. If you're working for a television station, if you're a weatherman, if you're a news anchor, be good at what you do. If you're a computer programmer, be good at what you do. If you're a manager, an executive, a supervisor, be damn good at what you do. If you're flipping burgers at McDonald's or Whopper at Burger King, be good at what you do. If you're mopping floors or dumping trash, be good at what you do. Then you will never be replaced because jobs are so hard to find. Don't even think about the economy. The economy may be 4 or 5%, but that's for a few lucky ones. But a lot of people are still unemployed and underemployed. But we have to be good at what we do. And if you want something, if you want something bad enough, you have to go out there and get it. It's not going to come to you. Go out there and meet the right people. Get in touch with the people who can do something for you. Stop hanging around losers. Losers, you hang around losers, you be around losers. I don't care what kind of losers they are. Losers are losers, period. And if you're hanging around losers, you're always there, you're going to be a loser. If you want to make something out of your life, get the losers out of your life and proceed forward with making something of yourself, which is in turn is making the world a better place. And that's what this show is all about. Nothing more, nothing less. You know, even myself, I'm trying to make the world a better place by making my studio a better place, being a better radio host, you know, especially for the coming up new year, 2017, a better writer, a better book reviewer, a better public speaker. Some people say I need some training. That's okay. It's fine. I probably do. But, you know, I mean, hey, wow. You know, I think I'm clear enough. Whereas you can understand what I'm saying when I'm saying, when I'm talking about making the world a better place. And that's all it's about, folks. Okay, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio, WTTTY. We've got some great guests coming up this month, folks. We've got some guests for the new year. So it's going to be so exciting on the George Wilder Jr. Show. So you guys should totally tune in. If you can't tune in, if you can't listen, I understand that, because this is the holiday season. People are busy, people are traveling, people are going places, doing things. I understand that, but you can always listen to this show by podcast. Once the show's in, I mean, you can listen to the show anytime you want to. It doesn't always have to be live, because it's always here. Blog Talk Radio, George Wilder Jr. I mean, it's always here. And 347-857-1762 on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Thanks for tuning in, folks. We will be right back. We're going to do this. Yeah, the White Sox deal their ace pitcher Chris Sale to the Red Sox for four prospects. It just overwhelms me to talk about and to actually hear and witness a team getting rid of their best players for whatever reasons. Sometimes it's salary to the reason why they actually trade off their best players, but you'll never hear them say that. They'll just say, hey, we're going to get trade our best players for four other prospects. You know, wow. There was no, I think they just gave up on winning the World Series next year by trading this guy. I really do. If you don't think so, give me a call and let me know, or email me or inbox me and tell me why. But I think they've screwed their chances at a World Series by trading this guy. I truly do. And I could be wrong, but I mean, look at the Bears. If you see the Bears, they haven't won. I mean, actually, let me take that back. They won last Sunday's game, but still in all, they will not make the playoffs. No way. They're 3-9. So they will not make the playoffs. But what I'm saying here is that a lot of the players for the Bears that were traded to better teams with records a lot better than the Bears. It's just crazy. You know, why would you get rid of your best players and trade them off to better teams to come back and beat their old team? You know, I don't know what goes through some of these managers and coaches and their minds sometimes when they're dealing with these players. But, you know, I understand it's a business. It's a sport. It's what they do. It's how they themselves manage and want things. You know, I mean, but you as a fan, you wonder, what the hell are these people thinking? All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Follow me on Facebook, Block Talk Radio. I'm all over Amazon. This is the George Wilder Jr. Show. Let me say that obstacles cannot crush me. Every obstacle yields to a stern resolve. He who fixes to a star does not change his or her mind. And I want to say, be aware of your surroundings. This is the holiday season, folks. Be aware of your surroundings. People are out there to take what they think you have of value. So be aware of your surroundings, and also be aware that hate and racism is going around and breaking hearts. And you are listening to the Talk of Our Times, and everybody out there, no matter who you are, whether you celebrate or not, stay safe for the holidays, because the bad guys are out there. They are out to wreak havoc. The haters are out there. They are out to wreak havoc. The racists are out there, and they are out there to wreak havoc. So you guys out there for the holiday season, stay safe, because the bad guys are out there, and they're out there to do wrong. Try to make sure that you're not a victim. You're not a victim, because it could happen at any point and any time. All right, you've been listening to George Wilder Jr. Show on Black Talk Radio. I had a person on the show the other day talking about domestic violence, and it's all over the place, folks. It's happening as I'm on the radio right here. And we're going to have to do something about that. Let's go to the phones. All righty. Okay, you're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Go right ahead.
Hey, George. This is Vince Gaglione. How are you tonight? Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Oh, no problem, man. Thanks for coming. Thanks for wanting to do it.
Certainly.
I mean, I'm in debt to you. All right, tell us a little bit about yourself. You give us a bio and all that good stuff. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I'm down here in Raleigh, North Carolina. I'm originally from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Moved to Raleigh at the tail end of 2006. So I was looking to make a life change. You know, I figured, you know, time's getting a little bit shorter. So if I'm going to make this change, I better do it soon. So as it turned out, yeah. You know, I got down here and And I'm still here 10 years later. So it worked out really, really great. As far as how I got started writing, back in the day, I was, as a youngster, I used to do a lot of journaling in my spare time. So for some reason, I just had a knack for it. I would just write things down in a journal. And right, I put it down over the years. A lot of time went by until the tail end of 2011, when I actually experienced, you know, a situation I never thought I dreamed I'd be in, and that was dealing with the death of my significant other. She had lost her youngest son 4 months earlier, and she went into a depressive spiral and just never came out of it, and resulted in her taking her own life very beginning of 2012. So for me, you know, I was kind of left, you know, dealing with the grieving process and trying to figure out how to get myself back on track. And about 9 months later, you know, while, you know, spending a lot of time awake overnight, just my mind racing, thoughts just, you know, kept floating around in my head. I couldn't seem to, you know, find any way of reacting. So I decided I should just write this stuff down. So I, I don't know what happened, but, you know, middle of the night one night, I just thought, well, I used to journal as a kid. I think it's time to break it out again. So that kind of got me started on my path. And, you know, I put together a number of entries, and I decided after I'd completed a few and I was working through my process, I thought, well, this would be really great if I could share this, and if it helps anybody else who's been in a similar situation, then it would be worthwhile. So I decided to publish my journal entries in my first book, and that book was titled The Narratives Keeping the Soul Alive. And, you know, as I worked through the grieving process, over the next 2.5 years, I continued to write journal entries and continued to publish them. And, you know, once I had cleared all of that, it actually morphed into more of a personal growth exercise for me. Questions I'd been dealing with for a long time, you know, wondering what my place was in the universe and all that fun stuff, you know, wondering, you know, what was going to make me happy. If I was living my life the way I wanted, I wound up journaling all of this. And to this day, it continues as a personal growth exercise for me. So that's kind of what brings us to 2016.
Okay, it sounds great, man. It sounds great. Sound like you putting your life down on paper and sharing it with others who may have gone through some of the things that you have gone through. And and that's great, because, you know, a lot of people out here are going through things that you have similar described, but it may be a lot worse than what you've been going through. But it's great that you've journalized all of this stuff, and you get it and you have it published so other people can read it and maybe be inspired from it.
Yep, exactly. It's really hard, you know, if you're mm-hmm. writing these types of entries, and you're kind of, you know, I kind of looked at it as though at one point I thought to myself, well, wow, I can't believe what I just wrote and I just published, you know, because it's your innermost thoughts, you know, my innermost feelings.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's really hard to do.
That's the same thing with me, man. Sometimes when I'm writing, I put down my innermost thoughts. I put down things that I probably shouldn't say. I put down things that, you know, well, George, that's too much information you're writing down there, you know. But you know what? The readers love it. They love when you are real. They love when you are genuine in your writing. They crave it.
Yep. Yeah, it's 100% authentic. You know, and that's the key, you know, and that's what I had learned over time. You know, just you want to try to be as authentic as possible. You want to get to that authentic self, you know, because a lot of times we're taken away from that. And, you know, of course, we all run into situations in life where that's going to happen. But the important thing is to try to write yourself, you know, recognize when it does, and then write yourself, and then, you know, move forward. So that's what I try to do. And even my shortcomings, you know, I'll drop those in there as well. It's something that I'm thinking about, or something that a situation I could handle differently. I'll write about it and try to work through that process in that entry.
Okay. Generally, what does writing do for you? Does it make you a better person? Does it, you know, bring something out in you? What does writing actually do generally?
Well, I enjoy writing. And for me, a lot of times it's about, you know, I'm usually, if I'm wrestling with a particular issue and I'm just, you know, thinking about it during the day, or I know that something's on my mind or something's been bothering me, writing it out, actually journaling it is key, yeah. Because you can sometimes look at it, you know, once you do that and then you read it back to yourself, you can sometimes look at it and say, oh, wow, I didn't know this was happening. I didn't understand the impact this was having on me at the time. Yeah. So it's actually a wonderful, you know, self-help practice. And that's, you know, part of the reason why I do it.
Yeah, I do it. I do. I write also, man. I'm a published author, so we have something in common.
And yeah, I read some of your excerpts. I gotta get the books now.
Okay, I write generally because it's fun. I enjoy it. I mean, when I'm reading back something that I've written, I said, "Damn, did I write that? Did I? Oh wow, that's good." You know, or if it's not good, I will change it. But I do it because it's fun. Sometimes I, you know, if I didn't have writing, I don't know what the hell else I would do. But it is fun. It's
totally
enjoyable. It is fun. It's enjoyable. I make it like that. I make it fun and enjoyable because I know if it's fun and enjoyable to me, the reader will have fun and will enjoy it and will be entertained. If it, you know, at first it has to start with me.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Understood. Yeah. It's a great exercise, you know, for me doing it for the personal gain, but also I enjoy it too. So it's like, if I'm not writing, you know, then I kind of wonder, what am I going to write next? So I do blog posts, I'll do, you know, forums, things like that. I've written a few short stories, but I just enjoy writing. So it kind of cycles for me. You know, it's like as I live my life, I will write these entries. But at times when I'm kind of peaceful and tranquil, then I won't write anything. And I start thinking to myself, man, I got to write something. So I'll pick up a new project.
Yeah. And the most, I think the most gratifying for me writing is when a reader will get in touch with me and say something positive about what I've done, because when that happens, that just makes me want to write more.
Yep. Yeah. The unsolicited reviews are great. You know, I don't have too many of those, but every now and then when I take a peek out on Amazon or BNN or iBooks, and I see a review that, you know, it's just like, it came out of nowhere and I got a good review and a good rating, I just kind of, you know, kind of floored by that. It's like, wow, they really like this.
Yeah. Speaking of reviews, man, I've had 1,000 downloads of one of my stories and not one review. I'm baffled. I'm not one review. Right. And go right ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I think it's just in general, the review rate is very low, you know, because my first book, I have dropped it out there for free and it's getting downloads every day, but I'm getting very few reviews. I think I've only gotten like 3 since I put it up as a freebie. Yeah. It's just, from what I understand, it's like 1%, if that. So you're pretty close.
If
you got 8 reviews out of 1,000, you're pretty close. Yeah, but it's kind of discouraging at times. So I hear you.
It is discouraging, but it doesn't stop me from writing, you know, because, you know, as long as I know there's people out there, when I check the ratings, as long as I know that there's people out there downloading the book and giving me feedback from the book, a lot of people can't write reviews for some reason. They don't write them, or, you know, a lot of them.
Yeah, and, they don't like to write them for some reason.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, where can we find your books? I mean, your journal entries.
Okay. They're all published in my books. The series is titled The Narratives and they're 7 volumes currently. Mm-hmm. You can find them on my website. Yeah, I'm at 7. Website is vincegaglione.com. So that's vincegaglione.com. And I have the books set up on all the major platforms as ebooks. So you're going to, you know, find them on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Kobo, iBooks, a whole bunch of others. And there are links to those out on my website. I also have paperbacks, some of them. Others, you know, they're too short for paperback, but I do have some paperbacks set up as well, and they're available on Amazon.
Oh, thanks. That sounds great. Sounds wonderful. I hope you guys out there hear that. Vince, before you go, is there something else you would like to say to my audience that you haven't said already?
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of us, we're going through a difficult time, of course. Everyone is dealing with different issues. And a lot of times, you know, sometimes we can't make sense of them. So, you know, one of the things that I encourage people do is to just, you know, stop what they're doing and just kind of take some quiet time out for themselves, because, you know, we're in a world that's constantly go, go, go. And we're always doing things, and we've got a million different things that are distracting us. So, you know, if you take some time out and get quiet and you start thinking about, you know, these things that you might be thinking about, whatever issues, whatever questions you might have, you know, just reflect on those and, you know, kind of turn inwards and listen to yourself, and then write them out. You know, anybody can journal. Anybody can just grab a piece of paper and just start writing. There's no real rhyme or reason or method to it. You just write. You know, that's as simple as it can be. And then go back and read what you've written, because a lot of times you'll find, you know, some of the answers are buried in there, things that you don't know you were even thinking about. You know, so that's a great exercise.
All right, author Vince Guillon on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Thanks for being on, man. You were great.
Sure. Thanks a lot, George. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye. All right. That was a great, great interview. Great person. Great all-around author. Okay. And we will take a break right here. We will be right back, folks. Stay with the George Wilder Jr. Show.
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Black Talk Radio.
Well, as we know, Obama is about to leave the White House. We know that Obama is about to leave the White House. Trump is president of the United States. He's president-elect. But the day that Obama leaves the White House, Donald Trump will become, I believe, the 45th president of the United States. And a lot of people are debating Obama's accomplishments. His legacy, Obama's legacy, he wanted his legacy to be actually the health care bill, the Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. Okay, now Donald Trump and the Republicans, they have promised to repeal it, to get rid of it, to throw it out. And they are. That's one of the reasons to why Obama wanted Clinton to win this thing. She won the popular vote. She didn't landslide this guy in the popular vote, but that electoral vote is what killed her and Obama. And now Obama's legacy is in jeopardy. I mean, like jeopardy, folks. You know, and a lot of people are saying, what are his actual accomplishments as president? Well, we have a clip here and we're going to play it. And it has Obama's, at least in my view, alleged accomplishments. Okay. But he's going to live and die on these things. But his Affordable Care Act is in trouble. We know it as Obamacare. Okay. I'm going to tell you something, folks. When this thing first was signed into law, I didn't care too much for it because it was just for some people, not all people. You know, I mean, it depended on your income. It wasn't for some people. It wasn't for all people. It was for some people. Like myself, I was for the single payer. You know, so it's just, I don't see his accomplishments as much, really. I really don't see his accomplishments as much. But listen to this. It may, you know, say something about him, and it may not. All right, here we go.
So help me God. Congratulations, Mr. President.
Barack Obama has had a busy first 7 years as president. So in this video, I'm just going to lay out all the things his administration's been able to accomplish. President Obama kept his biggest campaign promise and ended the Iraq War. And he kept the homeland extremely safe, unlike his predecessor who allowed a massive terrorist attack against both our largest city and our capital. President Obama also prohibited the use of torture, which had been rampant under Bush. He created the New START Treaty with Russia to reduce each country's nuclear weapons arsenal. A year after his inspiring A New Beginning speech in Cairo, young people armed only with smartphones and laptops took to the streets in the Arab Spring uprising in Egypt that quickly spread throughout the region. Obama supported the revolutions by ushering Mubarak out of power and protecting the Libyan people from the genocidal madman Muammar Gaddafi. A similar call for change in Syria turned into a devastating civil war, with Bashar al-Assad committing war crimes against his own people, including using chemical weapons on civilian population centers. But instead of involving the American people in another ground war or bombing the Syrians, Obama used these credible threats of force and tireless diplomatic efforts of John Kerry to convince the Russian-backed Assad to give up his chemical weapons stockpile completely. President Obama authorized numerous covert U.S. special operations missions to rescue American hostages, including the infamous nighttime operation at sea to save Captain Phillips from Somali pirates. When it became clear the American public was uncomfortable with the reach of the NSA, Obama reformed it to more clearly conform to the Constitution. Obama has gradually reduced the number of U.S. troops in Afghanistan to around 10,000, officially ending the American-led war in 2014 in favor of an Afghan-led, NATO-supported coalition. He drastically reduced the number of civilian casualties caused by U.S. airstrikes in the Middle East by using a smarter, more accountable targeting and authorization protocol. He also ordered a shift to mostly unmanned aircraft, a strategy that both saved money and removed American airmen from the dangers of the battlefield. In 2011, President Obama ordered SEAL Team 6 to carry out the daring mission that killed Osama bin Laden in Abbottabad, Pakistan. Working through UN Ambassador Susan Rice, the president helped negotiate the peaceful, diplomatic splitting of civil war-torn Sudan into two independent countries. He committed the United States to the UN's Sustainable Development Goals. Through his pivot to Asia, the president reaffirmed America's commitment to ensuring the region stays peaceful and healthy economically. This pivot included more cooperation with emerging powerhouse China on a whole range of issues, while candidly addressing differences on human rights, cybersecurity, and the South China Sea. Key to this pivot is the Trans-Pacific Partnership, a 12-country agreement representing nearly 40% of global economic output to increase American trade with the fastest-growing region in the world, and also to blunt China's desire for a less fair playing field among its neighbors. Obama ended the 50-year embargo of Cuba, normalizing relations with the island nation, reopening the U.S. Embassy in Havana, and visiting the country with his entire family. After Vladimir Putin annexed Crimea from Ukraine, the U.S. used sanctions to punish Russia for violating international law, weakening Russia's economy. Then, after reinforcing Ukraine with arms and financial aid, Obama bolstered NATO's collective defenses and gave a powerful speech in Warsaw's Castle Square on America's unwavering commitment to the security of its NATO allies in Eastern Europe. When Ebola was overwhelming health workers in Africa and threatening to become a pandemic, Obama rapidly deployed American assets to West Africa, including thousands of American military personnel, coordinating a global effort that quickly won the struggle against the outbreak. The president developed a strategy to lead a 65-member coalition to degrade and destroy ISIL, the terrorist group that had gained strength from the chaos of 12 years of war in Iraq and Syria. After years of painstaking work to bring Iran to the negotiating table, the Obama administration, led by Secretary of State John Kerry, reached a deal to stop the Iranians from acquiring a nuclear weapon. This prevented a nuclear arms race in the Middle East and kept America's strongest ally in the region safe. After taking office at the depths of the Great Recession, Obama pushed the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act through Congress, which created over 2 million jobs and jump-started an economic recovery that has now produced a record 65 consecutive months of overall job growth, with unemployment steadily falling below 5%. A firm believer in teamwork, he put Vice President Joe Biden in charge of managing the stimulus, which was praised for its extraordinary lack of waste. With millions facing foreclosure and homelessness at the height of the crisis, Obama and the Democratic Congress took measures to help many stay in their homes. And because states were cutting their budgets back, hundreds of thousands of teachers and first responders were about to be fired, but the Recovery Act and other measures stopped this from happening. With General Motors on the verge of collapse, the president made the risky decision to save it, and probably the nation's auto industry as well. That meant 1 million people kept their jobs. And last year, GM finished repaying its loan, returning to its rightful place among the world's leading car companies. Working closely with other world leaders, particularly the European Union, Obama prevented their economies from collapsing too during the economic downturn. He also led the successful effort to get the world's wealthiest countries to create a $100 billion World Bank fund to support developing countries' access to credit during the crisis. After the Bush bank bailout, the Obama administration forced Wall Street to pay all the money it borrowed back, with an additional $30 billion in interest, and then he put in place the strongest Wall Street regulation since the Great Depression, which gave the government a whole host of tools to prevent another Wall Street-caused economic crisis. The Obama Justice Department's investigation of financial crimes resulted in big banks paying more than $200 billion in fines back to the American people. In the ultra-competitive global economy, Obama has been relentless in promoting the effectiveness of the American worker, convincing companies like Apple to bring jobs back to the U.S. Even China's largest manufacturer, Foxconn, will build a factory in Pennsylvania. The president protected consumers from predatory practices like unfair payday loans and credit card deals, and created the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which was set up by now Senator Elizabeth Warren. He cut taxes for the bottom 95% of Americans to their lowest levels since the 1950s, increased funding for food stamps by $20 billion to make sure no one in America starves, provided affordable child care to working families, modernized labor standards, and reformed job training programs to make them more relevant to the 21st century economy. With all this, Obama has proven that taking care of the poor and working class doesn't hurt the economy one bit, and today, the stock market is stronger than it's ever been, with the S&P 500 and Dow Jones more than doubling and the NASDAQ tripling since he took office. After the Bush administration's mismanagement ran up the annual budget deficit, President Obama's team has been able to cut it by two-thirds. Largely thanks to Obama's energy policies, the average price for a gallon of gas in America is around $2 now, More than 13 million new jobs have been created during the Obama presidency, with the economy growing nearly 10% overall since he took office. That's double the growth seen by the average country in the rest of the industrialized world. As a candidate for president, Barack Obama promised to reform America's healthcare system. In 2008, that system was broken, with tens of millions of Americans unable to afford expensive private health insurance, a staggering number of whom were simply denied treatment they couldn't pay for and died. With the Affordable Care Act, President Obama and the democratically controlled Congress put an end to all that, and today, just over 2 years after people began signing up for Obamacare, around 20 million people have gained health coverage who didn't have it before. The president ended Bush's restrictions on embryonic stem cell research too, allowing federal funding for these projects to make significant medical advances. He also signed the first comprehensive improvements for the lives of Americans living with paralysis, authorized the FDA to regulate tobacco companies, forced chain restaurants to add calories to their menus, and oversaw the most sweeping food safety legislation in 75 years. Inspired by the Human Genome Project, the Obama administration launched the Brain Initiative to better understand the human brain and to solve the mysteries behind brain disorders like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, depression, and traumatic brain injury. He used the Stimulus Act to invest $18 billion in scientific research and opened up space to the competitive private sector, igniting a now booming private industry. He used $8 billion to expand access to broadband internet for poor and rural families, sped up deployment of a more comprehensive broadband infrastructure for the whole country, supported a free and open internet through net neutrality, greatly increased the government's ability to deal with cyber threats, set up a national strategic computing initiative to maximize the benefits of high-performance computing research, development, and deployment. And he created the White House Science Fair, which he always attends, to encourage kids to focus on the STEM subjects. So for good reason, President Obama is sometimes called the scientist-in-chief, and nowhere is that more appropriate than on energy and the environment. He has doubled spending on clean energy research, created tax incentives to boost adoption of electric cars, doubled the distance gasoline-powered cars will go on a gallon by 2025, partnered with the private sector to improve energy efficiency on a massive scale, and guided a nearly threefold increase in wind power capacity and a 30-fold increase in solar energy capacity. The U.S. government is now investing in research and development for biofuels, offshore wind, wave, and nuclear fusion energy, and its embrace of natural gas has helped cut U.S. dependence on foreign oil to its lowest rate since 1985, putting the country firmly on the path toward energy independence. President Obama set the first ever limits on CO2 emissions from power plants, limited mercury emissions and other toxic air pollutants, and introduced rules to limit methane emissions. And back at the start of his term, when the Deepwater Horizon offshore oil rig exploded in the Gulf of Mexico, sending millions of gallons of oil gushing out, Obama's government, in an unprecedented move, made BP pay $20 billion into a fund for victim compensation and environmental cleanup. The administration protected 260 million acres of America's public lands and water, more than any other presidency in history, strengthened the Endangered Species Act, and increased funding for national parks and forests. The president closed a deal with China to limit its carbon emissions for the first time, laying the groundwork for the historic worldwide agreement in Paris to fight climate change. And in a similar agreement, the Brazilians committed to reforesting an area of the Amazon that's roughly the size of Pennsylvania. And Obama made good on his commitment to the Paris Climate Agreement by making a $500 million payment to the Green Climate Fund, the first of more than $3 billion in contributions America will ultimately make to help poor countries deal with climate change. The Obama administration has invested heavily in reforming America's lagging educational performance at the K-12 level. He started off by ending Bush's much-criticized No Child Left Behind law and instead created Race to the Top, which encourages states to come up with the most effective school reforms, and coordinated the states in their creation of higher Common Core standards so students are better prepared for success in college and the 21st century global economy, where science, math, and computer programming skills are becoming increasingly important. His team also greatly expanded family access to early childhood education, funded the construction of new schools all over the country, expanded K-12 students' access to the internet in their classrooms, signed the post-9/11 GI Bill to improve veterans' access to higher education, expanded the Pell Grants program so more low- and middle-income kids could afford college, enacted reforms so graduates pay lower interest rates on their student loans, protected students from being deceived by for-profits like the University of Phoenix that are often very ineffective, and created a new college rating system that emphasizes value over prestige. President Obama cut maximum drug sentences for current and future prisoners, paving the way for the first drop in the federal prison population in 32 years, and became the first sitting president in American history to visit a federal prison, holding a meeting with six inmates. After several executions were mishandled, Obama ordered a review of the death penalty process. He limited the amount of military-style equipment local police departments could acquire, and encouraged the widespread use of body-worn cameras on police officers, which has allowed for unprecedented officer accountability and, thanks to a now constant stream of videos, has led to a national conversation about excessive use of force, especially against people of color. He signed the Blue Alert Law to provide police officers in the field with access to critical information when their lives are threatened. And after Congress failed to act to prevent gun violence after massacre after massacre, Obama used executive orders to promote safer gun technology, improve the background check system in several key areas, and set up a task force to figure out what other measures can be taken to limit gun violence. And when Congress wouldn't act on immigration either, the president concentrated enforcement on those who committed crimes, streamlined the visa process for those who want to come here legally, increased border security to make it much more difficult for people to cross into the United States illegally, and worked hard to lay the political groundwork for comprehensive immigration reform that almost passed, although Republicans in Congress were ultimately able to block it. Throughout his presidency, Obama has put veterans first. The most obvious example is by ending the two wars that had resulted in a tragic number of service members dying and suffering life-altering injuries. But he also decreased homelessness among veterans by 36%, decreased the veteran unemployment rate from a post-9/11 peak of 12% to just over 4% today, increased funding for the Department of Veterans Affairs by 33%, hired more than 1,600 additional mental health professionals, and improved access to VA healthcare, reducing average wait times to 4 days for primary care, 5 days for specialty care, and 3 days for mental health care. On civil rights, President Obama signed and implemented the Hate Crimes Prevention Act. He reversed the military's Don't Ask, Don't Tell ban on gays, came out in favor of same-sex marriage, then won a landmark Supreme Court decision legalizing it nationwide. He made affordable housing available to more people, appointed the first ever special assistant to the President for Disability Policy, established the White House Council on Native American Affairs, cracked down on companies that were abusing the independent contractor employee classification system, and strengthened rules prohibiting discrimination against pregnant workers. And the first bill signed into law by President Barack Obama was the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act that strengthened rights for workers who suffered pay discrimination. President Obama also seated the third and fourth female justices in the history of the U.S. Supreme Court, including the first Justice Sotomayor of Hispanic heritage. Another one of his first moves as president was launching We the People, which gave Americans a way to create and sign online petitions to get the White House's attention on issues. On day one, Obama signed a memo that began a new era of open and accountable government. He launched data.gov to give the public easy access to government information, increased tracking of how the federal government spends its money, and launched challenge.gov, a website where citizens can submit innovative solutions to challenges presented by government agencies, elected officials, and private businesses. And in order to root out misspent tax dollars, Obama created the Government Accountability and Transparency Board. One of the most important but undervalued aspects of the presidency of Barack Obama is that he restored integrity to the White House after back-to-back administrations became mired in scandal. Over and over again, the president, with indispensable First Lady Michelle and the wise and loyal Vice President Joe Biden by his side, chose highly qualified, decent people to work in his administration. And he led by example, coming to work each day squarely focused on tirelessly tackling the problems he was elected to solve. He never lost the trust of his supporters, allowing him to maintain the momentum and credibility needed to achieve significant accomplishments well into his final 2 years in office, a time when most presidents are ineffective lame ducks running out the clock on their term. Obama will leave office with an approval rating over 50%, a remarkable number for such an active presidency, and a figure that will grow as historians judge his time in office favorably, especially compared to his Republican predecessor. The United States was facing a catastrophic economic collapse when Barack Obama took office. Still, expectations were historically high for the charismatic Illinois senator who became the first African-American president after emerging with a campaign that inspired the world in a way few others have. Not only did Barack Obama save the United States and the world from a disastrous depression, but incredibly, he lived up to the hype set by his own meteoric rise. And he achieved much more than the major accomplishments I've told you about in this video, while constantly traveling the country and the world, consistently delivering some of the best speeches in history. So Obama's performance in humanity's most important job has, arguably, allowed him to effect positive change in the lives of more people than anyone else ever has, which is why it's likely Barack Obama will be remembered as one of the most inspiring figures in modern history. Thanks for watching.
Hit that like button if you agree with
me and want to help my message spread, and be sure to subscribe to the Daily Conversation to get my next video. For TDC, until next time, I'm Bryce Plank.
It's been a long time. But tonight, because of what
in the African American community, he's going to be remembered for what he could have done, but did not do.
Change has come to America.
Oh, give me a break. We're still in the same rut after 8 years of his presidency, if not worse. Obama will be remembered for being one of the, you know, 44, 45 presidents of the United States. That's what he's going to. Some people are calling Obama the worst president ever. And these are African Americans. You know, a lot of these people have, like I said before, like a lot of these people have who voted for Obama twice. They now had voted for Donald Trump because they were so disappointed in Obama that they said, the hell with Obama, we're going to go with Donald Trump. And this is serious because they felt Obama was not on their side. How can he be on the sides of African Americans with something like Obamacare? Obamacare helped more white people than it did blacks. And to me, it's an atrocity. And Obamacare, regardless of what he did for the economy back in 2008 or 2009, Obamacare would have been his legacy, because if Hillary Clinton would have gotten elected, she would have preserved his legacy. But now that the Republicans are in there, they're going to strip, they're going to undo Obama. They're going to spend the entire 2017 undoing Obama. Anything that he's done, anything with his name on it, any executive authority, they're going to rip it apart. They said this, and I believe them. Obama believes them. And so this guy, you know, I mean... I actually don't think he's done anything for black people. I like myself. I like, let me put it this way. I like many of the African-American leaders throughout the communities in Chicago and elsewhere. We all wanted Obama. We tried. We asked Obama to come to some of these high crime communities and talk to some of these brothers, to putting the guns down, to stop killing each other. He would not do it. He wouldn't do it. But he knew how to talk about gay marriage. He wanted gay marriage. He wanted bathrooms in schools to be used by people who thought or felt that they were of another sex. He wanted that. He threatened the school system with holding back money if that didn't occur. He can't do anything for black people. He's been hearing it all his life, and he's been dodging it, pretending like it's not there. He gave lip service to it. He'll say a few things and that's it. He likes parties, award ceremonies, and all this kind of thing, giving people awards and parties and music. But other than that, this guy, I don't think he's done anything. I'm going to tell you something, folks. I mean, you can disagree with me. You can agree with me, whatever you want. I think his legacy, I don't think Obama has a legacy. Okay. I hear what people are saying about his accomplishments. Maybe, maybe so, maybe not. I don't know. But I do know that he hasn't done jack for African Americans. Some of these people who have who voted for him in 2008 and in 2012, they're in the same predicament that they were in when they voted for him. Black Africans, Americans, Black Americans, put this guy in office. There is no way of getting around that fact. We put him in office because we thought that he was going to be something different. We thought he was going to be with us. But that first year, those first 4 years, he was doing nothing but running after Republicans who spat on him every time. And if you try to defend Obama against the Republicans, he would turn on you. You know, he admired Bush. He admired Cheney. He admired all of those Republicans who put their foot up his ass. He admired them. He admired Ronald Reagan. He said he did. You know, he was half. I agree with one thing that I've heard, but he took it back after he said it. Morgan Freeman, the actor, the over-publicized actor, from what I can see. Morgan Freeman, we all know who Morgan Freeman is. I read something that he said on Huffington Post a few years ago. He said, Obama is not a Black president. He said, Obama, and I quote, Obama is a half Black and half white president. This is what he said. He took it back a few days later, or the minute he said it. But the thing is, I agreed with him. Obama is not a Black president. He's a mixed race president. That's what he is. And it showed. And it showed. Anything that involved Black, it seemed like he would, you know, ease away from it. Any issue that involved Black people, he would ease away from it. You know, and when Black people put his ass in office, Black people made him rich. Black people is the reason why his kids look so good today. Because we made him president. We gave him that salary. I voted for him twice. I can criticize this guy until the cows come home. And I'm totally disappointed in him. I don't give a jack about all those accomplishments, if they were accomplishments at all. I'm looking at African Americans who put this guy in office, who voted for him twice. And he has done nothing. Gay people, yeah. I mean, the reason why we have gay marriage here is because of Obama. The reason why we got two guys walking down the streets kissing each other is because of Obama. The reason why we got two women hugging each other is out here in the street is because of Obama. Gay marriage all over the place. He's done more for Hispanics. He's done more for refugees, allowing them into the country, giving them food stamps, giving them housing, while people who voted for him are homeless. And this is true, folks. Whether you want to put your head in the sand or just bury your... or just bury your existence. This is true. All of this is true. And right now, Obama is disappointed that Hillary Clinton did not win the election, because if she had won this election, she would have been a third term Barack Obama presidency. There is no doubt about it. From the beginning, I did not want a third term Barack Obama presidency. However, given the two candidates at the time, Clinton and Donald Trump, Clinton was the clear winner. She was a clear person to be the president of the United States because she had more resolve than Donald Trump. Okay? And that's the reason why I voted for Hillary Clinton, because she and the millions of us have. Okay? We did. But somehow the Electoral College, I don't understand it. And but she beat him hands down in the popular vote. But it's the Electoral College that kicked her ass. But still, in all, I did not want a Clinton third term. I really didn't. An Obama third term. Okay, because she would have been an Obama third term. She would have made sure that all of his policies and everything that he did with his executive power stayed in place. Now that Hillary Clinton lost and Donald Trump has it, and the Republicans control Congress, they control Congress, they control the White House, they are going to undo everything Obama has done. And that is killing Obama. I mean, I'm pretty sure he's trying to kiss their asses to try to get them to keep some of the things that has implemented over the 8 years that he's been in office. I don't know if that's going to happen because they hate his guts, but Obama has a way of trying to make people, do things his way. But I don't really think that's going to happen. So African-American leaders are totally, totally disappointed with President Obama. That is no doubt about it. African-Americans are disappointed with Obama. You might not be. You might think he's a great president. He's a wonderful president. What the hell has he done for you? You might think, well, he's a smart president. He's gone to law school. He's taught at Harvard. He's done all of these great things. He's an upstanding individual. Black people don't think so. Black people think he's just an ass kisser for the Republicans, or has been for 8 years. And he just throw crumbs out there at us, making us think that he's really on our side when he has done jack nothing. Well, you can say, well, the Republicans have obstructed Obama. They wouldn't let him do nothing. Well, that's an argument that can be made, but still in all, he's president of the United States. He's supposed to get things done. One of the things I do know, and a lot of other people know, that Obama never did like to use his executive powers. He could have gotten a lot of things done. He could have filled a Supreme Court vacancy with his executive authority, but he wants it to be legislative. And the Republicans say, no, 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 no. So he gave it up. Obama could have done a lot of things for this country and for African Americans through his executive powers. A lot of things he could have done without the Republicans. He could have done a whole host of things without the Republicans. But he didn't want to do that. He didn't want to use his executive authority, the power that we gave him, because he wanted, like I said, he wanted to do it legislatively. And doing it legislatively means bringing in the Congress, the Republican Congress, which did not like him or does not like him. But he could have gotten a lot of things done without the Republicans, but he refused because he doesn't like using his executive powers. He doesn't like it that he can do things so easily. He wants to compromise. And that was hard because you can't compromise with people who do not want to compromise with you. You have the power. You have the executive power. Get things done without them. But Obama wouldn't do that. Because I remember voting for Obama. I voted for Obama the first term because I wanted him to do something to send somebody to jail for this illegal Iraq war where 4,000, maybe 400, maybe 4,000 young people were killed in an illegal war by the Bush administration. I wanted to see Bush go to jail. I wanted to see Cheney go to jail. These guys were clearly a part of this illegal war and this illegal effort. They got all these kids murdered. Obama refused to send them to jail. That's one of the things. And we wanted to see somebody go to jail for this destruction of the economy back in 2008. Wall Street, Goldman Sachs, all of these corporations that screwed the economy, that caused the great housing bust. We wanted to see people go to jail for that. Even the media was talking about that. Obama did not send anybody to jail. He just didn't like it. He doesn't like sending people to jail, especially in government. In government. This is all over his hands. There's other things and other people who have deserved to go to jail. Obama refused to prosecute some of these people who deserve to be prosecuted. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. All right, we're Madigan Rauner. This is Madigan. I have to read this. This is, okay, House Speaker Madigan. We're talking about Illinois politics right now. Michael Madigan says Rauner is out to help his wealthy friends and corporations. I mean, we know that. Michael, tell us something we don't know. We know Rauner is out to help his buddies and corporations, disguised as trying to help the people of Illinois. I've said this yesterday on the show. Rauner is no way out. Is no way he's out to help anybody but himself and his friends. And he wants to, like I said yesterday, he wants to tear down Illinois, rebuild it to be Raunersville. Instead of Illinois, it'll be Raunersville. And he wants to run for re-election in 2 years. That's not going to happen because the people are so pissed off and fed up with this guy. So we're going to talk more about this tomorrow because we're just about out of time. I think we've got about 8 minutes left into the show. And people, it's been fun. And I want my thanks to author Vince Guglielmon and for being such a great, great guest. I want to say this again. Obstacles cannot crush me. Every obstacle yields to a stern resolve. I think that's just so true. Okay, Michael Madigan says that Bruce Rauner, the governor of Illinois, is out to help his friends and corporations. Tell me what Republican governor is not. I mean, this is what I'm saying. What is Madigan saying? Madigan is the Speaker of the House in Illinois. So, okay, it says here that House Speaker Michael Madigan emerged from a leaders' meeting on Tuesday today with a fiery yet unexplained accusation that Governor Rauner is holding the budget hostage to help his wealthy friends and corporations. We know that. So tell us something we don't know, Michael Madigan. When asked to elaborate on that accusation, Madigan went silent. One of the things about Madigan, he doesn't like the media. He doesn't like cameras, but he feels that Bruce Rauner is out there banging and bashing him and thrashing him, that he has to come out of his shell and approach the media and say something. He has to feel as though he's defending himself against all of these attacks that are leveled at him by Bruce Rauner. Okay, the governor office fired back with a statement accusing Madigan of stalling to force a crisis. They're fighting each other while the people in between suffer. I'm a little bit more with Michael Madigan than I am with Bruce Rauner. There is no doubt about Bruce is out to help his friends. We all know that. And we all know that he will not win re-election. The speaker came out with a list of non-budgetary items he said should be warrant the creation of working groups, including the workers' compensation. Okay, we're going to be talking about more of this tomorrow, folks. We are just about all out of time. Thanks for listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. We're not gone yet. Thanks for listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. We will be right back after, if we can find this clip, we will be right back after this.
Bombs begin to fall. Never saw. the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man who has a claw. Heaven help us all.
Welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show. We're just about off. Okay, someone just said 90 seconds in my ear. Make sure you join me tomorrow, which is Wednesday. We're on 4 days a week, Monday through Thursday, starting at 6 to 7:30 more time, if it is warranted. It's been fun today, folks. It's been great. A great guest, great topics. Make sure you join the George Wilder Jr. Show every day that we're on the air and tell other people that we are here. Because a lot of people don't know, but tell them during the show. All righty, folks, we are off the air right now. Join me tomorrow, same time, same station. All righty, bye bye, everybody. you know, I mean, this I just don't like this dude.